a new nudge from the government to get people to buy a house or apartment for the first time. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Starting today, some first-time homeowners will find it easier to afford a monthly mortgage payment. The Federal Housing Administration is lowering what it charges to insure mortgages. FHA mortgage insurance drops by 0.5% with a typical savings of about $75 a month. The government hopes this will push as many as 250,000 people to buy their first dwelling, Marketplace's Nova Safo reports.
The new policy could help you, but there are some big ifs. If you've got a decent credit score, if you can make a down payment of at least 3.5%, and if you live somewhere affordable. If.
This change is not going to make places like New York and San Francisco suddenly affordable.
That's Darren Blumquist of RealtyTrack. He says the drop in monthly mortgage costs will help some medium-sized cities.
The Denver area, some parts of Boston, Minneapolis, parts of Seattle as well, the Seattle metro area would be pushed into affordability.
But many of the ifs for first-time buyers are the tough mortgage requirements banks are setting, tougher than even the FHA requires, says Jim Parrott. He used to be a housing advisor for the Obama administration.
There are probably more folks out there who are being locked out of the market because they can't get a loan than those who are simply unable to afford the loans that are being offered.
So Parrott says until it takes fewer ifs to buy a home, it'll likely remain tough for many first-time buyers. In New York, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
At the World Economic Forum, now concluded in Davos, there was a lot of focus on income inequality and what it does to society. President Obama is hoping his focus on middle-class economics will help more of those in the bottom 99% get a boost. We learned from a report out today from the left-leaning Economic Policy Institute that not all one-percenters are created equal. And as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, the income gap is much wider in some states than in others.
Nationwide, the average income for the top 1% is $1.3 million a year. But in Connecticut and New York, it's well over $2 million. The ratio of what the rich earn to the rest is also much higher, 50 to 1, says report co-author Mark Price at the Keystone Research Center.
This is a pretty thin air at the top of the income distribution.
Price says the air is thinnest the closest to Wall Street, where bank and hedge fund managers are making more than ever. Of course, it also pays to strike oil in North Dakota. But in that state, the gap between top earners and everyone else is much smaller than in New York and Connecticut. J. Michael Collins at the University of Wisconsin explains oil jobs are booming and workers are in high demand.
North Dakota has had wages climbing. That's what helps with income inequality. When you have wages stagnated for 15 years, it's going to be hard to not have income inequality worsen.
Maybe if the whole country had unemployment under 3%, like North Dakota, we'd be hearing less about income inequality these days. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
With interest rates at some point headed up in the U.S., investments in so-called emerging markets have seemed less attractive to many investors. Among the varied effects of this shift, an increase in remittances when family and friends in the U.S. send money back to their home countries. There are some recent data on this, and our friend Leon Krause, the Univision anchor and correspondent, has been combing through. Good morning, Leon.
Hi, David. A pleasure talking to you, as always.
So this report shows, for instance, that as money moves out of emerging economies, there can be sort of an inverse effect. Remittances go up.
It's very interesting what the World Bank has just published in this report on remittances. I mean, just picture this. In almost one-fourth of the world's 150 more or less developing countries, remittances are larger than all capital flows. Remittances are mostly acyclical, that is, they have remained fairly constant even in times of crisis, and they play a very significant role in supporting consumption. They're crucial for emerging economies.
Well, in a way, it's like an ad hoc kind of overseas development aid. It just sort of comes family by family.
That's exactly how they work. Now, there are a couple of challenges. The main one is the cost of sending them. Some people say that information and innovation will eventually help ease this terrible problem. The other challenge is how most people use the money they receive. For example, 91% of the families in El Salvador use this money for the most basic needs. Less than 2% save part of the money. The goal should be ideally to have people invest and save rather than use remittances mainly as this sort of, like you say, artificial salary that generates a curious dynamic in societies.
The U.S. and Cuba, as part of this new process of thawing out the Cold War relationships, one of the first things the U.S. did the other day was make it easier for people in the U.S. to send cash back to Cuba.
It's going to be very interesting to see how that develops, right? I mean, we know how different both economies are, to say the least. I think the main point is how governments and private institutions help people use remittances better so that it not only becomes a matter of a day-to-day consumption deal, but also help economies develop and strengthen in a more serious fashion through investment and saving.
Leon Krause, the Univision anchor and correspondent, always good to talk to you.
Thank you so much, David.
Another story we're following today, the first U.S.-listed exchange for the virtual currency Bitcoin. Coinbase is opening with $106 million in venture capital money from Wall Street firms and the New York Stock Exchange. Unlike regular currency, Bitcoin is not backed by any national government. It can be used more anonymously, but like traditional currency, it's often stolen. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.